Chapter 13. Had asked for another song at the Three Mariners. "El, Mother Cuxum," he said, "how's this? Here's Mrs. Newson, a mere skeleton, has got another husband to keep her, while a woman of your tonnage have not. I have not. Nor another to beat me. Ah, yes, Cuxum's gone, and so shall leather breeches. Yes, with the blessing of God, leather breeches shall go. 'Tisn't worth my old while to think of another husband," continued Mrs. Cuxum. "And yet I lay my life I'm as respectable born as she. True, your mother was a very good woman, I can mind her. She were awarded by the Agricultural Society for having begot the greatest number of healthy children without parish assistance, and other virtuous marvels. 'Twas that kept us so low upon ground, that great hungry family. Eh? Where the pigs be many, the wash runs thin. And doesn't mind how mother would sing, Christopher?" continued Mrs. Cuxum, kindling at the retrospection, "and how we went with her to the party at Millstock, do ye mind? At old Dom Ledlow's, Farmer Shiner's aunt, do ye mind? She we used to call Toad Skin, because her face were so yaller and freckled, do ye mind? I do, I do," said Christopher Coney. "And well do I, for I was getting up husband high at that time, one half girl, and t'other half woman, as one may say. And canst mind she prodded Solomon's shoulder with her finger tip, while her eyes twinkled between the crevices of their lids? And mind the sherry wine, and the silver snuffers, and how Joan Dummett was took bad when we were coming home, and Jack Griggs was forced to carry her through the mud? And how a letter fall in Dairyman Sweet Apple's cow barton, and we had to clean her gown? Why, grass never such a mess as they were in. Eh, that I do, such doggery as there was in them ancient days, to be sure. Ah, the miles I used to walk then, and now I can hardly step over a furrow." Their reminiscences were cut short by the appearance of the reunited pair entered, looking round upon the idlers with that ambiguous gaze of his, which at one moment seemed to mean satisfaction, and at another fiery disdain. "Well, there's a difference between 'em, though he do call himself a teetotaler," said Nance Mockridge. "He'll wish her cake dough afore she's done of him. There's a blue beardy look about en, and 'twill out in time. Stuff, he's well enough. Some folk want their luck buttered. If I had a choice as wide as the ocean sea, I wouldn't wish for a better man. A poor twonking woman like her, 'tis a godsend for her, and hardly a pair of jumps or night rail to her name." The plain little brougham drove off in the mist, and the idlers dispersed. "El, we hardly know how to look at things in these times," said Solomon. "Here was a man dropped down dead yesterday, not so very many miles from here, and what why that, and this moist weather, 'tis scarce worth one's while to begin any work o' consequence today. I'm in such a low key with drinking nothing but small table ninepenny this last week or two, that I shall call and warm up at the Mariners as I pass along. I don't know, but that I may as well go with thee, Solomon," said Christopher. "I'm as clammy as a cockle snail." 14. A Martinmas summer of Mrs. Henchard's life set in with her entry into her husband's large house and respectable social orbit, and it was as bright as such summers well can be. Lest she should pine for deeper affection than he could give, he made a point of showing some semblance of it in external action. Among other things, he had the iron railings, that had smiled sadly in dull rust for the last 80 years, painted a bright green, and the heavy barred, small-paned Georgian sash windows enlivened with 3 coats of white. He was as kind to her as a man, mayor, and churchwarden could possibly be. The house was large, the rooms lofty, and the landings wide, and the two unassuming women scarcely made a perceptible addition to its contents. To Elizabeth Jane the time was a most triumphant one. The freedom she experienced, the indulgence with which she was treated, went beyond her expectations. The reposeful, easy, affluent life to which her mother's marriage had introduced her was, in truth, the beginning of a great change in Elizabeth. She found she could have nice personal possessions and ornaments for the asking, and, as the medieval saying puts it, take, have, and keep are pleasant words. With peace of mind came development, and with development beauty. Knowledge, the result of great natural insight, she did not lack. Learning, accomplishment, those, alas, as he had not. But as the winter and spring passed by, her thin face and figure filled out in rounder and softer curves. The lines and contractions upon her young brow went away. The muddiness of skin which as he had looked upon as her lot by nature departed with a change, to abundance of good things, and a bloom came upon her cheek. Perhaps, too, her gray, thoughtful eyes revealed an arch gaiety sometimes. But this was infrequent. The sort of wisdom which looked from their pupils did not readily keep company with these lighter moods. Like all people who have known rough times, light-heartedness seemed to her too irrational, and inconsequent to be indulged in except as a reckless dram now and then. For as he had been too early habituated to anxious reasoning, to drop the habit suddenly. She felt none of those ups and downs of spirit which beset so many people without cause, never, to paraphrase a recent poet, never a gloom in Elizabeth Jane's soul, but she well knew how it came there, and her present cheerfulness was fairly proportionate to her solid guarantees for the same. It might have been supposed that, given a girl rapidly becoming good-looking, comfortably circumstanced, and for the first time in her life commanding ready money, she would go and make a fool of herself by dress. But no. The reasonableness of almost everything that Elizabeth did was nowhere more conspicuous than in this question of clothes. To keep in the rear of opportunity in matters of indulgence is as valuable a habit as to keep abreast of opportunity in matters of enterprise. This unsophisticated girl did it by an innate perceptiveness that was almost genius. Thus she refrained from bursting out like a water flower that spring, unclothing herself in puffings and knick-knacks, as most of the Casterbridge girls would have done in her circumstances. Her triumph was tempered by circumspection, as he had still that field mouse fear of the coulter of destiny despite fair promise, which is common among the thoughtful who have suffered early from poverty and oppression. I won't be too gay on any account, she would say to herself. Tea would be tempting providence, to hurl mother and me down, and afflict us again as he used to do. We now see her in a black silk bonnet, velvet mantle or silk spencer, dark dress, and carrying a sunshade. In this latter article she drew the line at fringe, and had it plain edged, with a little ivory ring for keeping it closed. It was odd about the necessity for that sunshade. She discovered that with the clarification of her complexion, and the birth of pink cheeks, her skin had grown more sensitive to the sun's rays. She protected those cheeks forthwith, deeming spotlessness part of womanliness. Henchard had become very fond of her, and she went out with him more frequently than with her mother now. Her appearance one day was so attractive that he looked at her critically. I happened to have the ribbon by me, so I made it up, she faltered, thinking him perhaps dissatisfied with some rather bright trimming as he had donned for the first time. Eh, of course, to be sure, he replied in his leonine way. Do as you like, or rather as your mother advises ye. Odd send, I've nothing to say, tot. Indoors she appeared with her hair divided by a parting that arched like a white rainbow from ear to ear. All in front of this line was covered with a thick encampment of curls. All behind was dressed smoothly and drawn to a knob. The three members of the family were sitting at breakfast one day, and Henchard was looking silently, as he often did, at this head of hair, which in color was brown rather light than dark. Thought Elizabeth Jane's hair, didn't you tell me that Elizabeth Jane's hair promised to be black when she was a baby? He said to his wife. She looked startled, jerked his foot warningly, and murmured, did I? As soon as Elizabeth was gone to her own room, Henchard resumed. Egad, I nearly forgot myself just now. What I meant was that the girl's hair certainly looked as if it would be darker when she was a baby. It did. But they alter so, replied Susan. Their hair gets darker, I know, but I wasn't aware it lightened ever. Oh yes. And the same uneasy expression came out on her face, to which the future held the key. It passed as Henchard went on. Well, so much the better. Now Susan, I want to have her called Miss Henchard, not Miss Newson. Lots of people do it already in carelessness. It is her legal name, so it may as well be made her usual name. I don't like t'other name at all for my own flesh and blood. I'll advertise it in the Casterbridge paper, that's the way they do it. She won't object. No. Oh no. But, well then, I shall do it, he said, peremptorily. Surely, if she's willing, you must wish it as much as I? Oh yes, if she agrees, let us do it by all means, she replied. Then Mrs. Henchard acted somewhat inconsistently. It might have been called falsely, but that her manner was emotional and full of the earnestness of one who wishes to do right at great hazard. She went to Elizabeth Jane, whom she found sewing in her own sitting room upstairs, and told her what had been proposed about her surname. And you agree, is it not a slight upon Newson now he's dead and gone? Elizabeth reflected. LL think of it, mother, she answered. When, later in the day, she saw Henchard, she adverted to the matter at once, in a way which showed that the line of feeling started by her mother had been persevered in. Oh, you wish this changed so very much, sir, she asked. Wish it? Why, my blessed fathers, what an ado you women make about a trifle. I proposed it, that's all. Now, Elizabeth Jane, just please yourself. Curse me if I care what you do. Now, you understand, don't ego agreeing to it to please me. Here the subject dropped, and nothing more was said, and nothing was done, and Elizabeth still passed as Miss Newson, and not by her legal name. Meanwhile the great corn and hay traffic conducted by Henchard throve under the management of Donald Farfrae as it had never thriven before. It had formerly moved in jolts, now it went on oiled casters. The old crude vivavose system of Henchard, in which everything depended upon his memory, and bargains were made by the tongue alone, was swept away. Letters and ledgers took the place of LL dot, and usual heat, and, as in all such cases of advance, the rugged picturesqueness of the old method disappeared with its inconveniences. The position of Elizabeth Jane's room rather high in the house, so that it commanded a view of the hay stores and granaries across the garden, afforded her opportunity for accurate observation of what went on there. She saw that Donald and Mr. Henchard were inseparables. When walking together, Henchard would lay his arm familiarly on his manager's shoulder, as if Farfrae were a younger brother, bearing so heavily that his slight frame bent under the weight. Occasionally she would hear a perfect cannonade of laughter from Henchard, arising from something Donald had said, the latter looking quite innocent, and not laughing at all. In Henchard's somewhat lonely life he evidently found the young man as desirable for comradeship as he was useful for consultations. Donald's brightness of intellect maintained in the corn factor the admiration it had won at the first hour of their meeting. The poor opinion, and but ill-concealed, that he entertained of the slim Farfrae's physical girth, strength, and dash was more than counterbalanced by the immense respect he had for his brains. Her quiet eye discerned that Henchard's tigerish affection for the younger man, his constant liking to have Farfrae near him, now and then resulted in a tendency to domineer, which, however, was checked in a moment when Donald exhibited marks of real offense. One day, looking down on their figures from on high, she heard the latter remark, as they stood in the doorway between the garden and yard, that their habit of walking and driving about together rather neutralized Farfrae's value as a second pair of eyes, which should be used in places where the principle was not. Ah, damn it, cried Henchard, what's all the world? I like a fellow to talk to. Now come along and hay some supper, and don't take too much thought about things, or you'll drive me crazy. When she walked with her mother, on the other hand, she often beheld the Scotchman looking at them with a curious interest. The fact that he had met her at the Three Mariners was insufficient to account for it, since on the occasions on which S. he had entered his room he had never raised his eyes. Besides, it was at her mother more particularly than at herself that he looked, to Elizabeth Jane's half-conscious, simple-minded, perhaps pardonable, disappointment. Thus she could not account for this interest by her own attractiveness, and she decided that it... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.